Welcome in, latest edition of That SEC Podcast. It's a Marler Monday with old Pete Golding. What's up, buddy?
Oh, there he is, Brodo. Happy New Year, dude. Do we say, how long do we say that for?
I think you get 1 week. Otherwise, yeah, get the hell out of here with that.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, Happy New Year.
Dude, I'm in the middle of something. Give me a second, Mom. And then I'll wish you all your bullshit.
Okay, well, let me tee you up here.
How are things going? Got into an argument with... Shut up for a second, Mike. I'm trying to talk. Oh. I got into an argument with Tim Brando, finally. That was cool.
Yeah! Did he block you?
Surprisingly, no! Shocked. There's my therapist. Oh, that's Pooh Bear the Prophet. I thought I said Pooh Bear the Therapist. Saw you on your post. I barely recognize you acting like a Boy Scout without all your F-bombs. Well, I had to mutter all of them under my breath in that press box watching that Bama Indiana game. So that was fun.
Let's start there. Is that the worst whooping Alabama's ever received, considering the stage, considering the playoff, Rose Bowl, former Saban assistant whooping your ass? Is this the worst loss ever for the program?
No. That will always be the 2018 national championship against Clemson, where they got beat by 28, yeah, with what people were calling the greatest team of all time, a team that beat all these different ranked opponents, had Tua, Jerry Jeudy, this great defense, all this stuff. Devontae Smith, I mean, that's where they had all those wideouts. I think the quarterbacks were Tua, Jalen Hurts, and Mac Jones, three like Heisman finalists. And then I think Clemson ended that game with a 10-minute drive where they never gave the ball back. And they were just running the ball down their throat. Like, it wasn't anything. I don't know, man. I think.
But this was up there.
It was bad. I hate to say it, but it wasn't something that I felt like was super. Like, if you would have had a conversation, you're like, what if Alabama keeps it close in the first quarter, decides to go for it on fourth down with the weirdest fucking three-play sequence? They're like, we're going to fake it. No, we're not. We're going to fake it. No, we're not. We're going to go for it. And you're like, what are you fucking doing? Just go for it. Like, or punt it away. Punt it away. The defense was playing fine at that point. But if you would have said all that, then this is how it's going to unfold. I would have been like, yeah, I could see that happening. Like, 38-3 is bad. I'm not saying it's not bad. It's very bad. At the same time, I said going into the season or going into this game, I was shocked so many times this season that people didn't just line up and run right Alabama. Auburn did it a little bit and got like 4.6 yards a carry. Georgia ran it like 6.9 yards a carry down their throat the first time they met. And then when it mattered most, like pulled off of it, which would just make no sense to me. So Indiana, I just felt like they were going to line up and run it right at Alabama and until they could stop it. And the thing was, Bama had shown time and time again this year they couldn't stop it. And it was an incredible job for Indiana. The best team clearly won. This was not something that I think that should have been a shock. Like, if you watched Indiana this season, it shouldn't have been a shock at all. I think the part that was funniest to me, and funny is probably not the right word that I'm sure Bama fans aren't going to want to hear, but the part where it's 17-0 and it's like they come out in the second half, and I remember they get a three and out, and I was looking over here and I was like, they're going to run the ball down their throat to prove a point. Like, just to prove a point, that's exactly what Kurt Sigdetti is about to do. That's what a good coach would do. It's what Kirby would do. It's what Saban would do. We're going to line up and show you that we are more man enough to beat you. You are not man enough to stop it, and we're going to run it right down your fucking throat. They have nine plays on the drive for eight, and eight of them were rushing carries. I phrased that so poorly. They open the second half with a three and out. They have nine plays on the drive. Eight of them are run plays. They are gashing Alabama, and it's third and one. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at Chris Gordy, and I go, they're going to run it for between like 4 to 7 yards. Like, Bama cannot stop it. And instead, they elected to throw it to a wide open receiver for 24 yards and a touchdown. It was like the nail in the coffin and proof that like there was nothing Bama was going to be able to do to stop it. So I thought the best team won. I thought I wasn't super shocked by any means. I that may sound bad, but I wasn't super shocked just from watching Indiana play this year. I think that what gets lost in it because of social media and all the other dumb shit that people want to say, it immediately becomes, Bama should have never been in the playoff. And it's like, no, this is like the most two things can be true at the same time. Like they, like the idea there was a very weird narrative with some people that just will remain nameless of like, hey, well, they lost four games for the second year in a row. And it's like, I don't think that any Bama fans looking at it like, oh my God, they lost four games in 2 years in a row. It's like, they just won 11. They, if they went 7-4 or 8-4, that's a big deal. They went 11-4. The three losses were to three of the four losses were to playoff teams. One is the greatest 5-7 non-playoff team in the history of the world, Florida State. But it was like, you know, I think it was a very limited team that clearly had a ceiling. And one of the teams that was involved in that ceiling above them beat their ass in Pasadena. So,
hey, does your sweater say Soy Boy?
No, it says South. Also, poor little Cry Simpson. Emily, your entire fucking roster has entered the portal. Ty Simpson just beat the shit out of Auburn. And you want to sit here because he broke a rib and his career might have ended? You cannot sit here and be an Auburn fan and do this whole, we're holier than now, we believe in Auburn, we're just good people. Fucking A&M light over here. And then we're going to make fun of Ty Simpson for being emotional during a game. Get the fuck out of here. Come on, guys. Come on.
Hey, will you read this comment by Brodo?
Allie just marched in.
You'll like it.
Why don't you tell everyone what a baby you are during games?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Well, because we already know. That's the reason.
Yeah, he said because we already know. Think it's like a surprise. I only keep the secret to you. Anyway.
Brodo, no, he's locked on your – he's subscribed to your Locked On Cox.
Thanks, Brodo. This Cox for you, bro.
Hey, Tay, appreciate you. Marler, enjoyed your post game after the Sugar Bowl. You clean up really well. No,
dude, the best. More. That best was a game changer. I didn't realize how Ole Miss coded I was in my garb that I was wearing. I was like in like a light blue, it was like a white and blue checkered long sleeve shirt, and then like a blue, like a navy blue vest. And I was like, oh my God. I got to the game and I was like, fuck, I look like every single fucking Ole Miss fan here. I'm everyone that I make fun of all the time. That's Vineyard Vine mannequins. That's exactly what I look like, just fatter.
Right. Well, I'm glad you threw that in there. So let's go to that since you were there at the game. Sugar Bowl, was that – I saw you tweet it. Best ending ever, you said.
No, I did not say that.
You said something like that, but like best end of game, something or other.
Wildest end of a game I've ever seen. And you know what's funny?
What about the kick six?
Fuck off, dude. Go fuck yourself.
I just set you up for that one.
Well, no, like, I'll take you through the eyes of what I was experiencing, right? I am happy today, I think. I don't know. I've been kind of going through it at the start of the year. But like, so the experience itself, Mike, was like a fucking nightmare. We had like, I was like, okay, the game's at 7. I have to be in the stadium to watch this Bama game. And I have to write about it. I have to do all this other stuff. It's like, so I'm going to go down there. I'm going to get in front of a TV as soon as they open. They open at 3. Or they open at 2. Dude, we met one of my friends for brunch. And she and her husband were like, oh my gosh, do you guys like Lebanese food? And I was like, please don't take us to a Lebanese food for brunch. I'm going to shit my pants at some point in the Superdome. I don't want to do that. So we go in there. We have Lebanese food. So I'm just like tummy grumbling the whole day. It's just terrible, terrible. And then I get into – we have to get our credentials. We go get to the stadium. And I get into my seat at like 3:05. Like that's how long it took with traffic, with everything to get like into the stadium, like all the – because, you know, like security was pretty tight because of last year, which is great. Then I get there. And they've got a bank of like a row of TVs, Mike, that's suspended from something from like the rafters of the Superdome. So it's like in front of you and there's like 5 TVs. None of the TVs were lined up in sync with each other. They were all off by like a half second. They're all in silence. So I'm just sitting here at the very end. No one else is in the entire press box besides me. And I'm like, it was awful. It was awful. So then we go down on the field. Like, you're allowed to go on the field 5 minutes before the game, but the Superdome, or I guess the Sugar Bowl, is like super antiquated with a lot of shit. Like, they don't let you film anything on a phone, like in the post game press conference. They only do 2 players of the winning team and the winning coach. That's it. And you're just sitting here and like, you have to record audio. You cannot record video from your phone. It's like, the most fucking 1990s stuff imaginable. It's like, wow, Shay, I got my, well, what do you have to say here about that? Well, boys to go in the fourth quarter there, huh? And so, like, wearing like a top hat and shit. So with 5 minutes left, they let you go on the field. But when they let you go on the field, they tuck you in this little corner, just like Broda does to his balls before he looks in the mirror. And they tuck you in this little corner and they're like, don't move from here. And you're like, okay. And like, if you have a blue pass, you're not allowed on the field. And I was like, there's no goddamn way they are going to check every single pass as they're walking on the field. So we're sitting there, and then Ole Miss kicks the field goal and they're driving towards us. And I'm like, this is insane. Like, this is, I assumed they were going to overtime. And credit to Pete Golding, me, and everybody that was on that Ole Miss staff. It was just such an incredible moment. And so then they kick the field goal, best kicker in America, and they had to kick off to Georgia. And we just see like them throwing the ball frantically all over the place, and then the clock expires. So everyone starts going towards the field. They're not letting anybody on the field. They rolled that fucking, what do you call it? That stage on the field and off the field 3 times, Mike. Like the stage that they did the celebratory thing at the end.
I assumed you had a hand in that. Were you pushing it?
Dude, at the end, manual labor is my whole thing. And so at the end, I left at 1:30 in the morning from the Superdome Central Time. The thing was still fucking out there. They were like that crew was like, there's no chance I'm moving this thing again. But like, so then we were on the field, then we had to be off the field because they had like one more time down. And then you had the weird time down, which was like, because they had the onside kick where no time went off the clock. Giant dildo collection. No, it's not, because I'm literally sitting on it right now, you dumb idiot. So anyway, they like finally clock sticked down to zero. And it was really cool, man. It was like I know we're kind of doing this like in a, not talking about the game first, but like the game itself was just awesome. I felt just so genuinely happy for Pete Golding, my twin, and for every other person involved with the Ole Miss thing. Cause it was like, I'm telling you right now, somebody that lives in Baton Rouge, went to the game, like was around other people in the press box that were covered that primarily cover LSU. And one of the things that seemed to be a pretty obvious thing was like, I appreciate you, OM All American. But like, one of the things that was so interesting was it felt like the idea that everyone had there was, okay, all right, we're going to go cover the Sugar Bowl. It'll be great. Blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever, it's the Sugar Bowl. But at 11, which is midnight on the East Coast, the portal opens up. And then we're going to see Lane Kiffin start taking all these different players. And is Charlie Weiss going to be recruiting Kewon Lacy and Trinidad Shambles? And I'm telling you right now, man, that was 1,000% the idea that like every person I had interacted with from LSU side had going into it. And on the field, around the Ole Miss team before the game, after the game especially, but before the game even, it was very much like, it was the most like, fuck you football imaginable. It was like, we are here to prove a point. None of us are going anywhere. Every single person outside of Oxford is doubting us. And Mike, it was fucking awesome, dude. It was, I knew they were going to take over New Orleans. Like I figured, it would be something similar like Somalis in Minneapolis. I figured it would be like that for Ole Miss in New Orleans. Sorry. That was just a joke, guys. I figured it would be like 65-70% in favor of Ole Miss fans. I did not expect what that team did. I did not expect them to do that. And it was just awesome, man. He made Kirby blink. He made Kirby flinch. And it was like, I mean, this was all the things that Georgia does. All the things that Georgia does better than almost anyone else in the country is they don't make defensive mistakes. They constantly, they are fundamentally sound. They don't make pre-snap penalties. And at halftime, there is no staff or head coach better in the country at halftime adjustments than Kirby Smart. There's a reason why you look at what the first Bama game, even when Bama was up, they didn't score in the second half, just like last year against Alabama. And like, and there's so many other examples from Kirby Smart and that staff. And then you saw what Ole Miss did, and they were the ones that made all the halftime adjustments, and it was fucking awesome, man. It was awesome.
Right, and now they're marching on to the semifinals to play Miami, America's team, except if you're a Lane Kiffin LSU fan. Shout out the Ole Miss All-American. Marler's awesome, except when he's talking shit about Ole Miss fans. Look, always enjoy watching. Win a day, Chambliss all the way. See ya in Glendale. So, I mean, you kind of laid it out there, but this really fucks LSU and Kiffin, didn't it? With Ole Miss still being alive and their players not being able to the portal.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's come out today. Trinidad, if he gets his waiver, he's staying at Ole Miss. I don't know if it's been officially announced yet, but it sounds like the kicker and punter are staying. And there's a lot of optimism now that Kewon Lacy's going to stay.
The Kewon Lacy thing is so interesting because it's like, I mean, I talked to people in the stadium that were like, yeah, he's 1,000% coming to LSU. And it felt like, I mean, maybe. Like I get why he was great in the offense and Charlie Weiss is going there and the running backs coach is going there. So, like, yeah, I get it. But he also, there's that whole price tag of it being rumored that he was, not rumored, but probably not the best word. It's like reported that, like, people in the know said $1.8 million is about what he would be getting. And so I just wrote an article about this for Louisiana Sports. I think it just went live and it's a shameless plug, but it was like, what ifs for LSU going into the 2026 season? And one of the things is, like, if you're talking about having to allocate your money in a responsible way, which is that is part of this whole thing now. It's like, not everyone's the Dodgers. Like, Texas Tech can probably be the Dodgers, where it's like, we're going to go fucking spend $1 billion, see if you can beat us. But a lot of these teams, for year over year success, are going to have to figure out a way to responsibly spend money. And if you're talking about figuring out a way to build this roster, if you're Kiffin, spending $1.8 million on Kewon Lacy, when you could probably get three, maybe four offensive linemen that you desperately need even more than the running back, that's a hard sell, especially when you already have Harlan Berry on the roster, a former five-star from the state of Louisiana. The Trinidad thing is awesome. The Trinidad thing is just, it's fucking awesome. And I think it also, it creates one of the most fascinating storylines of the portal. But with Trinidad, I'm telling you, man, like, I'm a prisoner of the moment. I'm like, I love Pete Golding. I mean, everything he says with the camera in his face is just like, yeah, I don't fucking know. I don't give a shit. Like, it's awesome. It is awesome. And you see it in some of the players. They ask, like, what did Coach Golding say at halftime? He was like, they said, you know, you just got to go out there and drop your nuts. And you're like, yes, awesome. And Brodo loves that, especially. No one loves having nuts dropped on him more than Brodo. And so he gets it. And I remember him and I were DMing on Snapchat about that later in the day, but we'll talk about this another time. I think the fascination with Chambliss is they're going to attack the NCAA because the way his lawyer is setting this up is, hey man, like, he's a top tier quarterback in the portal. That number would demand around $5 to $7 million with incentives. That is equivalent of a third round draft pick. And if you're saying that he had his tonsils taken out and missed however many games, so he doesn't get to have a fucking extra year because the NCAA is stupid, and you're saying you can't get a medical redshirt because of something that stupid, we're going to sue you. And the NCAA doesn't want any part of that. Like they want no part of having to go back to court and have to defend what everyone knows is, like, the worst fucking organization in sports. It's so bad. And so I think that he's actually going to win that battle just by the threat of suing him. And him coming back, it now creates this whole thing with Kiffin where you're like, I know this is super long-winded. I feel like all I've done is talk for 20 minutes. But, like, that's what you guys came here for, just to hear me fucking gab. So the thing with Kiffin that I think is so fascinating with Chambliss especially is every single quarterback Lane Kiffin has had since he – in the last 10 years or since he's been in Alabama's EOC, Blake Sims, Jacob Coker, Dart, Corral, Chambliss, like, 9 of the past 12 quarterbacks he's had have had at least 3,000 yards of offense and or 30 touchdowns. 2 of the 3 years that he didn't have a quarterback that did that, he had a running back that went off for over 3,200 yards and 54 touchdowns in 2 seasons combined. Like, the idea that he will succeed with no matter who is the quarterback, I think, like, the track record speaks for itself. The question becomes, does LSU have to go spend a shit ton of money now on Sam Levitt? Or does Kiffin now think that, listen, I fucking did it with a Division II quarterback that no one cared about that we brought in July. I can do it with anybody. And I think it's just another layer of how fascinating this whole thing is, really, between two teams that are not only dictating the outcome of a playoff, but also the portal at large.
All right. Well, let's rewind about 10 minutes ago, because I do got to push back on something you said. Lane Kiffin and LSU, they got to I mean, what are they, poor? Isn't that the reason he went to Baton Rouge? So that they could spend all this money? And they're saying they're going to spend $15 million over the cap? And now Ole Miss is spending to where they can't compete? That doesn't track with me when you talk Lacy and Trinidad and all these players.
About going to get him?
Well, you said it would be financially irresponsible for LSU.
Oh, it is. It doesn't mean they're not going to do it. We do financially irresponsible shit all the time. I DoorDashed $36 for the 5-hour energies yesterday, dude.
Like, right, but the point, the point being is it sounds like, and now again, nothing's confirmed, but it sounds like he's going to stay at Ole Miss. Uh-huh. And you just suggested it's because the price got too high.
No. I'm saying that has nothing to do with the decisions they're making. I'm saying in general, one of the things that's going to face coaches and programs in this day and age of football is it's great if you go get great players. Like, look at LSU last year. Top two portal class, $18 million. And it's like, man, Nick Anderson could be a stud from Oklahoma. Berrion Brown, he could be awesome. And it's like, no, they weren't. Like, you spent all this money and you went to a fucking Texas Bowl for the second year in a row. So I'm not saying it's going to deter them. I think this real weird Hatfield-McCoy back and forth that we're having with Ole Miss and LSU is fascinating because I think that a lot of players are going to get rich off of it in this little custody battle for players. Like, I think someone's going to pay Keywon Lacy $1.8 million and he's going to have a great season next year. I'm not going to sit here and say it's worth it or not. I'm saying coaches are going to have to sit here at one point and say, do we go spend $2 million on Lacy just to prove a point? Or do we go get fucking 3 or 4 offensive linemen when I already have a 5-star running back on the roster? And it's not just Kiffin. It's coaches everywhere.
Right. All right. Well, I hear that, but at the end of the day, as Cousin Shane likes to say 26 times a show, doesn't this all completely justify Ole Miss doing what they did with LSU fans have kind of come back and talk shit. We're like, what the hell? He could have coached the playoff. And this is the whole fucking reason why we could get to this portal. And what, like, let's say they bent over backwards and let Kiffin be the coach during this playoff run. What's he doing right now? Is he coaching the team? Is he recruiting players to LSU? I mean, you just couldn't have that.
Yeah, I mean, I was in that camp too. That I was like, well, if LSU or if Ole Miss wants him to coach, they'd let him coach. And I thought they were just as much to blame for him leaving than LSU was. I still think part of it is like there's a frustration from Ole Miss that is very justified. Like it doesn't take away from like them being upset. Like they have every right to be upset. I would be too. But there was like a thing for the Ole Miss that was like, all right, well, I mean, we're not going to let you just stick around and like coach the playoff and then just leave out the door because that would be like a slap in the face, which it would have been. If we are all being honest here, and I want to excuse Ole Miss fans from the class for a second, but every other person here that was talking about this set of circumstances, I think 95% of us were all doing it from a place of, yeah. Like everything's hypothetical because there's no fucking way they're going to beat Georgia and they're going to get to the semifinals of the college football playoff. I don't think anybody was looking at Ole Miss and thinking like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, this decision is ultimately going to be like really, really tough to make because they're going to be out no matter what. Like nobody was looking at this program thinking they would be where they are. And if we're being honest again, I think one of the reasons why Kiffin did so well there and became likable is because Ole Miss has always been this very non-threatening program that's like kind of cool. They got a great tailgate scene. Oh my God, you got to check out these cool ass like powder blue jerseys we got. Like the girls are the hottest. The fans are great. Like it's in this cool, like great. It's part of the old South. The SEC fans can like have some nostalgia with. But for the most part, it was like no one hates Ole Miss because they never like Ole Miss doesn't beat you. And I think that a lot of the conversations that were being had about like whether it matters or not of Kiffin staying or going were based off of this like hypothetical of, well, then it doesn't matter. They're not going to win anyway. And again, they have turned that upside down on its head. And now all of a sudden it matters. And now we've all come to realize this divorce is fucking messy. And the Kiffin and the staff, they've handled this very poorly. You had Charlie Weiss going from New Orleans to Oxford, back to Baton Rouge. He was like Sugar Bowl, back to Oxford to do game prep for the Fiesta Bowl, then back to Baton Rouge to do recruiting for a visit of a quarterback, then back to Oxford for game prep. And it's like, this is all within 72 hours. This sucks. Like, this is so unmanageable, and it can't keep going. But I think I speak for mostly everybody besides LSU fans, which is, I hope the entire fucking staff stays and helps them win a national championship. They're the best story in football right now.
Mm-hmm. How about this comment from Cousin Zeus? Kiffin would have lost that game.
Maybe. And didn't he beat Georgia last year?
Not this year. Not this year.
True. That's like one step.
Is it possible, though, that him leaving really did help Ole Miss? Just this team, this run, to just a love, not that they necessarily needed like a massive motivation. Hell, they're a playoff team. Yeah. But just to let the world know, hey, this team is not Lane Kiffin, and we're just a bunch of losers.
I don't know. I mean, like, I think it could. I think that also part of that is just like kind of, I think Kiffin, it's very fair to say that Kiffin looks horrible in this whole outcome. Like, he is the bad guy, and he looks worse and worse as this goes on. I think what, like, I said this on last week's show, and I said it in a lot more calm way, but I think that, like, the idea that Kiffin wants this whole thing to succeed. Oh my God, of course I want the best for you. Like, no, you don't. Everyone wants to win the breakup. Like, everyone wants to win the breakup. No one is sitting here right off the bat. Oh boy, hold on. I got a text from probably saying be quiet. That's TikTok. All right, my bad. No, so everyone wants to win the breakup. No one is sitting here. It's like, no, I really, really hope the best for my ex. It'd be like if you broke up with somebody and then like a month later, that person who you know, you, oh my God, of course, I feel so bad for her. I really do hope the best for her. I know I'm already dating someone else. And trust me, it was not like during when we were dating, like all these weird like factors that went into it. And like you're trying your best to explain why you're not the scumbag in the situation. And then by the way, the ex wins the fucking lottery within the next month and then is already dating someone that's hotter than you. And you're like, oh shit. Like, it's great. It's great in like, you know, in a hypothetical world, I'm sure Lane Kiffin wants like, oh, I hope the best for them. I hope they beat Tulane. But realistically, I don't think there's a single part of him that ever thought they were going to beat Georgia without him. And I also don't think that he thought this was going to be, that they would have any success without him. It's very easy to throw out hollow and empty compliments to somebody when you don't really think that they're going to be better off without you. And that is essentially what I think is happening. Allie did just walk in and tell me to be quiet. And another thing.
Hey, read this one for her from JD.
Auburn girls are the hottest, Marler. Allie?
Boom.
Allie said that we're not getting married anymore.
Oh, okay. Perfect. No. Hey, how about Shin? So I guess I knew that I was talking about after all. So he's a big Indiana guy now. Bama's broken, one-dimensional. Also, I grew up in Indiana for 19 years, so my fanhood isn't the most Texas thing. Just haven't been worth watching till now. So he's a Texas Indiana guy.
I can tell that comment really, really hurt you enough that you've now given $20 to explain yourself. I mean, I don't think Bama's broken. I think they were one-dimensional. I don't think they're broken. Indiana's a much better team. It's an objective thing to say and a fair thing to say that they are a better team than Alabama. I think Indiana's the best team in the country. I have been saying that since probably November. I've had a lot of issues with Indiana and their scheduling and how much of a paper tiger they were last year. That has not been the case this year. And I'm happy for Indiana fans. It seemed like, did you see them travel to Pasadena? That was awesome. But as far as Bama being broken, I don't think that's realistic. And I will feed into what you want more than anything with the comment. How about this? There's no goddamn way I'm going to hear an Indiana fan try to explain to me a program being broken because they just won 11 games and made the quarterfinals of the college football playoff. There you go.
Hey, shout out Pablo. Marler's adjusted his glasses.
We don't talk about, hold on. Emily said, I've never heard you say that once. We don't talk in real life, for one. Two, we don't talk a lot of Indiana football on that SEC podcast during the season, but I'd be happy to talk about the Big Ten more next year if they are the best teams in the country.
They will be. Pablo says Marler's adjusted his glasses 913 times. Significant decrease today.
Hell yeah, dog.
Hey, speaking of Bama and
broken
LSU and all this, so there's a lot of speculation. It's all over the country, so maybe there's nothing to it, Marler. But Ty Simpson, LSU, Ty Simpson, Tennessee, Ty Simpson, NFL. What's he going to do? Where's this crazy son of an onion going to go?
First off, fire Bill. Incredible comment. That's all fair, Shin. I'm happy for you, dude. I really am. I'm happy for Indiana fans. It's like, I was saying this to one of their podcasters the other day who reached out, and he was like,
they have podcasts?
Yeah, they have one. And he seems like a nice dude. He does explain football in a way that's like, did you guys also just start watching football? Because that's exactly what he's doing. I'll tell you what I love most about Cry Simpson. You know, like, and no matter where he goes, he could go to Kentucky, he could go to LSU, Oregon, anywhere. I bet you whatever program he goes to isn't coming off their sixth straight losing season. Fifth straight losing season, sixth straight loss to Alabama. It is remarkable that a program and fan base that once championed themselves as an everything school, which was code for, hey, we're good at basketball now, and we have an equestrian fucking dynasty that also came to an end. I'm happy it's basketball season for Auburn, because it's time for you guys to be shit at something else. Anyway, the Ty Simpson thing I think is kind of fascinating, because I personally think this is what Jalen Milroe should have done last year. I don't think Milroe should have ever gone to the NFL, because I don't think he got a big enough payday to go. He would have gotten around $3 million from somewhere last year. You can sit here and laugh at it all you want. You could say it's not true. Someone would have paid Jalen Milroe $4 million. And I know a lot of you are thinking, well, no, he wouldn't have. He was terrible. Well, the guy who did get $4 million at Miami, Carson Beck, was 0-2 against him. And there were multiple people, including places like Duke, that would have spent $4 million on lesser quarterbacks like they did than Jalen Milroe. I think with Ty Simpson, it's interesting because it's such a weird storyline, since he's been like a model for stuff that's like all things good that a lot of people want to see in college football, or they miss in college football. Like he's a guy that could have gone anywhere, former five-star recruit, came to Alabama from out of state, Tennessee, could have gone elsewhere in the portal after not playing right away, could have gone after he lost a starting job to Milroe, could have gone when DeBoer. I mean, there was all these different times where he could have left, and all he did was stay and figure it out and become a starter and lead this team to the college football playoff. I think that's a really good point. I think the thing that's interesting now is, if he's not going to be the starter and you're just going to put the ball in the hands of Keelan Russell, it's a gamble. It's a gamble. I don't blame him either way. Like if he comes back, I think that's good. I think he was injured a lot this year. That came out finally in the post game. I mean, he cracked a rib when he fumbled against Indiana, which, by the way, I'm sitting there in the media room next to Brooks Austin as he's running, and I go, just don't fucking fumble. And then boom, fumble. And Austin looks at me, he's like, why would you say that? And I was like, it's not my fault. I didn't fumble. I think the thing with him, like, I don't think he would be leaving to get a payday. And I think that if you're DeBoer, it probably is like, I'm not going to weigh in on whether it's the best move or not, because I don't know. I'm not good at decisions. I do think it's understandable at the least that if you're DeBoer going into year three, I don't think he's on the hot seat, but at some point it's probably time to be like, okay, let's just have it be our thing. Like the former Saban players, the quarterback recruit, let's have Keelan Russell's our guy. Like, Ryan Williams, our guy. Like these receivers we're bringing in now, our guy. The running backs, like, let's just fucking show everyone that we can do it on our own. I think that's probably fine. And then risking the highest ranked recruit in program history, dude. Like, Keelan Russell's not a five-star quarterback. He is the highest ranked recruit in the history of the program. Like, better than Bryce, Tua, Julio, everybody.
David Cornwell?
So, Isaiah who?
David Xavier? Cornwell? Remember David Cornwell?
Oh, yeah. Number 12.
Higher than
I
him? Just,
I think he was higher than him. Where was he from? That kid, I remember that kid very well. But no, I think it's one of those things where it's like you have to make the decisions best for the program. I don't know what that is necessarily. It is a bizarre thing. I will also tell you, dude, I think that the other side of this that we saw for years that was worse, which was juniors are leaving at a record pace to the NFL because they have some agent in their ear saying, dude, you're going to get paid. We're going to get you drafted. You're going to get this. Like you can go get paid right now. And we saw that number of juniors declaring for the draft rise every single year for like a decade. And then the number of juniors that weren't drafted rise every year for like a decade. And I think that the benefactor of these two things, which was players leaving school early without a degree, not getting drafted, that's much worse than, hey, this fourth or fifth year guy is going to stay for another year, collect a seven-figure paycheck and change his life. I'm kind of more in favor of that.
But I think every quarterback.
Oh, Ronnie's really going through it, huh? Is that the A&M fan, Ronnie Baker Barker? He used to wipe tears off Bama of fraud. I want you to restructure that sentence, dumbass.
You fraud, Marler. But no, I was trying to say, I think every quarterback that's got legitimate NFL consideration, I think they should do this every year.
Yeah.
Put your name in the draft. Put your name in the portal. I'm not saying, you know, just like Carson Beck, it worked out pretty well for him. And I'm not suggesting Ty Simpson should leave or has to leave or anything, but just weigh all your options. I mean, that's kind of the model we have right now, isn't it?
I agree. And I think it's good for the player, like, which is in a system that we have talked about for the longest time, which was, hey, the NCAA is the only one benefiting from all this. I will never forget this article I read about Cam Newton when he was at Auburn, and he looked up in the stands and there was like a picture of him on the cover of Sports Illustrated, or maybe it was in Sports Illustrated. And he's like, he said he looked at the article afterwards, and this one section, which is like 70 rows up and like 30 to 40 people wide, he counted like over 70 Cam Newton jerseys. And he's like, I didn't see any of that money. And we sat there and clutched our pearls for so long about him getting $180,000 and how ridiculous it was and like blah, blah, blah. But the people that were benefiting the most in this racket was the NCAA. It's about fucking time. Like I don't want to see kids transferring schools seven times and just to pick up a paycheck. Like I get that there's like people like TJ Finley where it's like that kid has three kids. He's trying to make a living and a better life for his family. I get it. Like, I don't like seeing the day and age of college football where it's like, I think we all feared that it was like, well, they're going to start paying these kids. And the real friends we met along the way were just getting a free education or like whatever fucking antiquated bullshit. I think the thing that we should have feared is the stuff that people like Jermaine Burton and Dylan Raiola did, more so Raiola. And I'm talking on the field, not off the field, but Raiola is a guy that is now in the portal. Former five-star, but he transferred to four different high schools. Jermaine Burton, four different high schools. And then you get into college and it's like, well, things aren't going my way. I'm going to transfer again. And I think that's what sucks more than anything is like, I'm not going to be mad at a kid taking a paycheck because there's somebody out there dumb enough to pay him. I am frustrated that it's like, well, you've opened up this fucking chaos and the NCAA just took their ball and went home. You know what I mean?
Right. Hey, shout out Johnny Delgado, loyal Gamecock here. Marlon.
Hell yeah, dog.
Word on the street, Beamer slashed the offensive line's pay. That's why they all left. Have you been hearing any of that?
I hope he blocked their accounts. It would be the first blocking they had all fucking season. Like they got seven players off the O-line gone. All of them fucking I'm not gonna finish that sentence.
Subpar.
All of them pretty bad. All of them pretty bad. And it is so frustrating. It is so frustrating to sit here and like if you are going to lose out on these players and they're going to leave for a better option or what the fuck, I mean, fine. Josiah Thompson, I think that one was kind of surprising because it became like he was the last one left. He's a former like five-star. He's one of the best players in the country coming out of high school, and he couldn't have been more disappointing. And I think that what frustrates me is you've had the most underachieving position unit, maybe in the entire country for a Power Four school was the South Carolina offensive line. I mean, like they allowed 40 or more sacks three straight years, Mike, 40 or more in three straight years. That is, what did I do?
You were going to say something. I'm not going to say it.
Oh, yeah, it's fair. No, I mean, like, but if you're telling me that like they're all going to transfer out because they got a new offensive line coach, let's talk about like an athlete. If you're upset that the person that recruited you is going to a new school and you want to go follow them, fine. Now, I don't know where the former South Carolina offensive line coach is or where he ends up. Hopefully, for the sake of most offensive linemen out there, it's nowhere near a football field. Hopefully, he opens up a facility and takes kids' money to do off-season drills, because what he was doing in pads wasn't fucking working at all. Now, I'm sure he's a great person and all that kind of stuff. If you want to follow the person that recruited you somewhere, I get it. There's not a single fucking player on that offensive line, Mike, that is good enough to sit here and say, no, I'm going to go get a bag somewhere else. No, you're not. Who's going to fucking pay you? Like, who is going to pay you money? Who's going to pay you American dollars to go play this sport that you have played where the unit has given up 40 sacks or more in the last 3 years? Each year. It's insane. And I don't know if it's about money. I'm just reacting to how frustrated I am watching that offensive line play for the last 3 or 4 years. But I'll go back to it as an athlete. If you're an athlete and the goal here is to get to the next level. And in football, it's a lot more attainable than it is for somebody like me that played baseball. It's like it's just way more difficult to go pro in that sport than it is in football, even though it's still difficult. But if I'm in college, one of the reasons I'm picking a big school is because I want to play in a big atmosphere, and more than anything, I want to get developed. Are you worried that you're not going to get developed correctly at South Carolina because of they replaced the worst fucking assistant that they had? I mean, from an athlete standpoint, from a competitor standpoint, I think it's bullshit, and that part I don't like. But at the same time, me and you could start out there and probably be fine against some of those teams.
Well, yeah, a new offensive coordinator, obviously, new offensive line coach. I don't think a reset of that position, which was god awful, as you just laid out, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I mean, it literally can't be much worse.
No, I said this repeatedly last year, and I was wrong, where I was like, it can't get any worse. It's not like the offensive line is going to take a step back, and they did. I'm with you, man. Now there is a concern, because I think this is like at least three. I haven't done the research on enough of these other ones, but it's at least three schools that have had six or seven offensive linemen in the portal, and like a majority of the starters. Like LSU, that entire offensive line is gone. South Carolina, that entire offensive line is gone. Alabama, that entire offensive line is pretty much gone. I think they get Michael Carroll back, which is big. So hopefully he doesn't leave. I would pancake block the fuck out of Marler. Hey, dumbass, we would both be on the offensive line in that case. There's no pancake blocks from defensive linemen. You don't block on the defensive line. Well, anyway.
I've seen two Florida linemen run into each other.
They kith. Now kith. So anyway, I think that
are you jerking it?
Yeah, totally. So close. I think that the opportunity, if it's somewhere else, fine, fuck it, like whatever. But I'm not gonna sit here and be mad at Shane Beamer. He's also done a tremendous job, I think, this offseason in general. So I'm excited to see whoever they get. Like, it's just, that's a position for me that I'm like, I cannot sit here and be like, oh my god, the sky is falling for South Carolina. Their offensive line left, and it's like they pretty much left last year, like during the season. Immediately smells his hand. Do people do that? I don't feel like I would have good smelling gum. I don't want that.
Hey, let me ask you this on a slightly related note.
Marlo rambling BS. Bring Driftwood in here. Send him an invite to let him come talk. I want to hear this person talk.
Cam Coleman, better fit, Texas or Texas A&M?
Ooh, Texas. Yeah. Texas. I mean, like, I like what A&M did this year with their receivers. I thought they were great. I really did. And also, I would not be surprised if he goes there, because that's where he was originally going to commit to out of high school. Now, that being said, it's very hard to argue the track record for Texas with Sark and the numbers he can put up with receivers. He was the ninth best OC at Alabama, but still managed to get Devontae Smith to win the Heisman, which is pretty cool. You remember that all too well. I think that Texas is he'll put up better numbers. I would rather go there if I was an athlete, like in this day and age of football. The other part too is, Mike, like you could sit here and say, well, A&M did wonders with that offense last year and those receivers, but that offensive coordinator's gone. So I would say Texas. I think it'll be interesting because he's going to visit Southern Cal and Texas Tech and Bama. And it feels like it's between Texas and Texas Tech, but you just got to wonder, like, if you're Texas Tech and you just came up pretty short and you just signed the best quarterback arguably in the portal, and you know the name of the game is for you to spend money. Now, also think about this too, Mike. They've already locked up like a shit ton of five stars for the next two classes from a recruiting standpoint. Does part of you just go like, well, fucking make Cam Coleman tell you no. Like, just go pay him whatever.
Right. So I just think it'll be interesting because I don't disagree with anything you just said, but getting paired with Arch Manning, I don't want to start an Arch versus Marcel war. Apparently they're already having those and they're going to be doing that all off season. But I think that'll be a major coup if A&M can pull that off. And I have no idea if they will, but if they do, that'll be a hell of a win for them.
Yeah, I would agree. And like, sure, maybe he wants to go be around a bunch of boys down there singing campfire songs, swaying back and forth. Maybe A&M's the place for Cam Coleman to go. I mean, listen, again, A&M well, and Auburn,
he played there this year.
School.
Maybe it just blew his mind how awesome it was.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
Maybe. Hey, speaking of also some maybes, I don't know how closely you've been paying attention to this because they're not necessarily on the 6-7 beat you're on. They're not one of them. But Kentucky is lining up huge portal visitors like Sam Levitt and throwing around crazy figures for some of these guys. Thoughts on Kentucky, who under Stoops, you know, it was always, well, do they even have money? Are they saving money for basketball? It's way different than getting a guy to visit than signing them. But if they get a bunch of these guys, what does that say about the level of commitment that we have kind of amped up in Lexington? Because I think that could be huge.
Dude, I'll push back on you and say that them just getting the visits is massive. It's shocking to me. I mean, like this is a program that I just kind of thought was going to fall by the wayside a little bit because they were never going to spend what they were spending with basketball. Basketball, that roster was rumored to get around $22 million for this year. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they've been in, they just got Ahmad Bro from LSU, which is like at least a pretty big name. I was shocked last year that they got a guy like Kendrick Law from Bama. And that's not the same on this level at all. But the fact that they're getting the visits says, one, that to me that Will Stein is going to be able to recruit there, for one. Two, that they're not fucking around. And that's like really impressive. I think that, like, I don't know how sustainable that level of commitment is. In my mind, what it kind of speaks to more than anything, Mike, is that there's – you're going to see – you know, in the past, it would be like, okay, well, listen, we got to get give this guy a couple of years to get it going. Like you don't really see that anymore. Like Clark Lee got it, but you don't see it. Like Auburn's a good example. A couple other places. Like you just don't see a lot of patience for new hires. What I kept saying in the offseason that I think you were going to see a lot now with the portal, and a lot of it's because of Kurt Cignetti and the job he's done in Indiana, which is it doesn't take time to build anymore. Like you can just figure out how to get a couple of key pieces and go win right away. What Cignetti has done has basically ruined the excuse factory for anyone moving forward. Hugh Freeze is never going to coach again. Like from a coach that gives up excuses constantly, you're never going to be able to coach in this profession in this era anymore with excuses, because you had a Cignetti go in and it's like, it's not like he got to Indiana and they're like, hey, by the way, let's go spend $1 billion like Texas Tech. It's like, no, we took a bunch of guys from JMU. We went 11-1 in year one, made the playoff. Well, now you're in year two. you went out and got a good quarterback, got a good running back, got a couple other key pieces, but most of it's just him coaching people up, making the right hires, being fundamentally sound and a great football coach. And they have become Heisman Trophy winning quarterback and the number one team in the country on the brink of going 16-0 for that no other team in the history of the program has done. You're going to see programs that are going to spend a shit ton of money right out of the gates to see if they can get that quick turnaround. And I think that's probably good for a lot of these places, like places that were pretty disinterested, like Kentucky in football for a long time or other places. They are going to have resources and excitement and things like when they have a new hire to see if they can like catch lightning in a bottle, similar to what Indiana did. Now, that's not going to happen everywhere or maybe anywhere, but it is still going to be, I think, something you're going to see right out of the gates. Ole Miss is a great example. Like Ole Miss is not going to be outbid when they are trying to prove a point, especially with Lane Kiffin, what the resources he's going to get at LSU. So I think out of the gates early, you're going to see a lot of spending from places. And I think maybe Kentucky is one of those programs that, like, I don't think they'd be doing this with Mark Stoops if he was the coach. Not just because of where he'd be recruiting, but it's kind of like, do we have to do this again? Like, why would I send money to Mark Stoops if he's going to go fucking 2-6 in SEC play and maybe get us to 6-6 on the year? Like, there's no point.
Right. Well, speaking of a program that'll never go 2-6 again in the SEC, Marler, Tennessee blowing up the staff on defense. And I think equally as important, but not getting enough coverage. I think the strength coach has been with Heupel since his time at Missouri. Not bringing him back. I don't think they've made a hire yet, but I think it's good that Heupel is recognizing there's issues in his program.
Yeah.
He's not standing pat. Thoughts on Tennessee, and they're always active in the portal. They're trying to upgrade all across the defense there. Any thoughts on Tennessee trying to fix a terrible defense?
If Jermond McCoy comes back,
he could.
he could. Yeah. No, I think it in this day and age, you have to be like you don't have to be constantly changing and like, oh my God, we gotta make sure that we're running this type of offense or we're doing this weird, unique type of defense. I don't think it's like these like exacerbated whole sweeping changes need to be made in every program. I think that if you are Tennessee, what you're seeing is your head coach realize, hey, we're not good enough right now to go win where we want to win. And it has nothing to do with the bowl loss at all. It is the defense cost us a lot this year. I think what's most impressive to me on this is it's not that I don't think Josh Heupel sits here and thinks, man, if we had a better defense, we would have made the playoff or we would have won a national title. Like when Brian Kelly was forced to make changes at LSU after 2023, he saw Jaden Daniels won a Heisman, and then two first-round receivers or two players at receiver get drafted in the first round. So he's like, that offense was incredible. You had one of the best, statistically speaking, one of the best Heisman seasons in the history of the award, and they went 9-3 because they couldn't fucking stop anybody in defense. That was like a wake-up call to him. That like, oh, my God, I've got to make a change. The fact that Josh Heupel is making this change and seeing the writing on the wall with a situation similar to that after going 8-5, I think speaks even higher to how good of a coach and person running the program he is. He is so criminally underrated in what he has done. Going into this year, I think he was one of like three SEC coaches that were 500 or better against top 25 teams. It was him, DeBoer, and Kirby Smart. I believe that was the case at their current school. It was a disappointing year, but it's a guy that went to the playoff last year. It's a guy that's offensively, you know how good this offense can be when it's humming the right way. But the fact that he is not going to sit here and do what a lot of coaches do, which is tell everyone like, no, fuck you guys. I know what's best for this. I know how to run this program. Like I don't need to hear anything from the outside. Like, I don't think he's making decisions based off of outside noise. I think him taking a self-evaluation and self-reflection of like what we need to do to get better and not just in a drastic situation that's forcing it really speaks volumes of what Heupel's doing. And I hope you clip that because Tennessee fans think I hate him and they're right, but I think this is really nice.
Well, do you think it's nice that it sounds like Missouri is going to land Austin Simmons to be the quarterback? Thoughts on that fit?
If LSU strikes out on Sam Levin, I feel like they're going to throw a bag at Austin Simmons. I don't know if it'll matter, but
I think the family's out on Kiffin.
On Kiffin, that's fair. So yeah, I mean, you know, I think for Missouri, oh my God, they could start 5-1 next year. I'll rest that schedule at the very end. Kentucky. No, I think with Mizzou, what you really want, if you're a Mizzou fan, what you missed this year and what's different than they've had in the past in the portal is there's always been like staples at Missouri where it's like, I feel like up until this past season, they have had a 3-year starter at quarterback for like 20 years. Like that has never been an issue for them. They have always had some guy that's been there for fucking ever. And he is a system guy and knows all. I think what you want at that position more than anything is not just production, it's stability. And maybe you get that with a guy like Austin Simmons. Now, the thing with Simmons, I think he has all the tools to be a very good quarterback. I said this earlier in the year, and Ole Miss fans got all up in arms, and I was fucking right, per usual. But it was like
I was thinking that.
the whole thing, I was like, I think I had him ranked as like the 15th best quarterback in the SEC after two games. Because he had thrown 4 interceptions in 2 games. Like, I mean, he's first off, he's like 12 years old. He graduated at 16. And I think he's going into his third year. He's about to be 20 or 19 years old. Like, it's something stupid. He's the Ryan Williams of quarterbacks. But the idea that he is going to come in and like, even in Kiffin's offense, like, just all of a sudden in year one be the guy, we saw that kind of fell on its face. And part of that was the injuries. But also part of it was there's a lot of parts of his game that he still needs to improve on. The arm talent, off the charts. He's very physically gifted, just like Brodo, but in different parts of his body. And so I think the thing with Austin Simmons, he still has to learn pre-snap reads. He still has to learn how to read a defense. He still has to learn the stuff off the field, like, you know, like film. Like, he's a great leader. When they were coming out onto the field, he was the one leading them on the field. Like he has a lot of things you can't coach, like arm talent and leadership. It's just some of the other parts of the game that sometimes take a little bit longer for players to get. And, you know, I think maybe he gets that under Eli Drinkwitz. I don't know. And also, not saying he wasn't getting this at Ole Miss, but if you're a quarterback like that, going to a place where you have a running back that is off the fucking charts talented and going to be getting a bulk of the focus of the offense, that's got to feel pretty good to you because nothing's going to be put – solely on your shoulders to go in.
Hey, all right, last thing for you. I think since we haven't met since Texas big bowl win over Michigan.
Yeah.
Can we handle another off season of Arch Manning for Heisman, Texas preseason number one? Because you know what's coming.
Yeah. First off, Peyton Brooks said, didn't Ole Miss have a good running back? I said that. Yes, they did. But the whole point is him going to another situation where he's not going to have to be the whole offense probably feels pretty good. Anyway, back to what you said. I hate myself for this, but I'm going to allow myself to do it. And that is cocaine. Marler and Carolina jackpot rub dickheads together. Oh my God. What? Is that a picture of a baby in his profile picture? Thanks, Fat Aaron. Why would you only rub the head? I don't understand.
You got to try it, apparently.
I think that guy's just mad that he doesn't have anyone to rub his dick with. So there you go. Okay, so here's the thing. I think the thing with Texas is there's like one thing a year. It's almost like a cheat meal. That I will allow myself to have when it comes to takes. This year it was, and I said it in August and July, and I was like, I fucking hate myself for saying this, but I think A&M has the ability to go to the playoff because of the way their schedule sets up and how good they can be going in from year one to year two. And then it came to be true because I'm really good at my job and I'm usually always right. So I'm going to get ahead of this and I'm going to hate myself for it. And I'm not going to talk about it all off season because I will jump off a building if I have to hear myself do what most of the fanboys in Texas media did for most of last year. But Arch looked really good in that bowl game. And he looks really good. That is very true. That is very true. I have a lot more. I had like one this morning. I think that he is going to be the front runner of the Heisman in general, whether we like it or not. The way that he looked in that game, the way that he looked down the stretch in games this season, minus Georgia, I think he finally figured it out. And I think that he is going to be really, really good next year. And I hate to say it, I think that he's going to, I think he finally figured out how to be like the guy. And I'm kind of all in on the Arch hype.
Okay. Well, way to go out on a limb there.
Yeah. What was the question?
If you're prepared for all, but it sounds like you're going to be the one leading the damn, you and Steven, you're going to be leading the damn train on Arch Manning hype.
Rubbing Arch dicks together. Who's that? Is that Steven? What's his name?
Steven Lanson, the encyclopedia. All right. Anything else, buddy? Anything you want to plug? Except that hair.
My hair's a hair plugs, dickhead. I have great hair. I'm not showered. Anyway, no, anything I want to plug? Not really. I got to go do some work. But I appreciate you guys. I've been in a funk to start the year. So I've really debated coming on this show today because you guys have a tendency to be total fucking assholes.
That shows they care. It's not one of those. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was gonna say I appreciate today's been great, so I appreciate you guys, and we'll be back next week.
All right, appreciate you, buddy. Thank you, and we'll be back tonight with Steven. Same time as always, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. Until then, we love you. We'll catch you. Bye bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.